Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's a very busy day in the national sports scene. Welcome in to another edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. And well, some bad news. If you're a Utah Ute football fan, you're going to have to wait at least another week for the start of the 2020 season. The announcement coming today that the season opener tomorrow against Arizona has been called off. That was the big news throughout the state. 2 days ago, the announcement that Kyle Whittingham had signed a four-year contract extension. Looked like this was going to be a promising week. A lot of football, Pac-12's back up and rolling. This is the second Pac-12 game that has been canceled. The Utes actually made the request to the Pac-12 this afternoon because of the amount of scholarship players available. Okay, the Pac-12, they have a game cancellation policy. A minimum threshold of at least 53 scholarship players need to be available. And teams need to have a minimum of 7 scholarship offensive linemen, 1 scholarship quarterback, and 4 scholarship defensive linemen. And due to some positive tests, the Utes do not meet that requirement. They put in the request for the cancel. Pac-12, they agreed. No game tomorrow. And you can get into the logistics of it. You can look at the statewide numbers. I'm not going to get into all of that. It is very simple, though. When you start the season, the first week of November, you have very little margin of error. And this game is now going to be ruled a no contest. And we've had this conversation throughout the last couple of weeks on the show, and I have said that no Pac-12 team will be considered for the college football playoff. I believe that. Cal Washington, that game's already been canceled. Cal on Wednesday announced one player had tested positive, and they had a group of others that were going through contact tracing protocols. And so, Cal, like Utah, they couldn't meet the roster threshold to play. And I believe that this is going to be a reoccurring theme for the Pac-12. Now, we still have a couple of games that will be highly interesting. Oregon and Stanford, USC, Arizona State. But now you're taking one game out of the North, one game out of the South. And ultimately, it's just not going to work. And I wonder if Utah is going to get a game in at all. And I think that's a fair question, at this stage in the game. It's November 6th. The game scheduled for November 7th is not going to take place. So Pac-12 schools are going to be behind the eight ball. And, you know, you can look at this Utah, were they a legit contender in the Pac-12 South? I have to believe that they are. It's not as if that this is a terrible division. USC's in the top 20, really outside of that. Who do you have to worry about if you're Utah? This is a big deal. And as far as getting a season played, that's probably the new concern for the Pac-12. I mean, I don't know how many Pac-12 games we get in all, but we know that the Utes in Arizona, that will not take place. So tomorrow's broadcast, which was scheduled to begin at 1 p.m., will not happen. We'll talk more college football coming up in just a bit here on Drive Time Sports. So let's transition from college football. Let's move over to Major League Baseball. Two big stories today. Number one, Alex Cora and the Boston Red Sox have come to an agreement, meaning that Alex Cora is back as manager of the Red Sox. That's 9 months after they parted ways because of his involvement in the Astros sign-stealing scandal. Last place finished last year in a shortened season. Boy, what a punishment, right? And look, I don't blame Boston. I don't blame the Red Sox one bit. Just like I don't blame Detroit. Detroit signs A.J. Hinch. Hinch was let go by the Astros. He was suspended for a full year. I don't blame the Tigers for going out and signing Hinch. He is the best manager available. I don't think there's any question. He's a World Series champion manager. Those are hard to come by these days. Same thing with the Boston Red Sox. I don't blame Boston for bringing back Cora. He's got a great rep with the players. The organization knows him well. He won a World Series championship. He's very popular with the players. And as far as the fans are concerned, they love him too. You know why they love him? Because he won. And that's what Boston loves. He knows how to handle the pressure. Now, I wonder if this was already agreed upon when Cora was let go. Okay, if your suspension, when it comes to an end, if we need a manager, we'll bring you back. And so I do question the front office. I mean, obviously, they have to be okay with it, but Shane Bloom, who is now the man in charge, I mean, he is the chief baseball officer for the Red Sox. Did he want to bring in his own guy? Was this already a foregone conclusion once Cora left? I don't know. The front office obviously didn't have a problem with it, so there should be no friction. And as far as those people that are mad at the Boston Red Sox, again, don't be mad at Boston. Be mad at Rob Manfred. He dropped this situation. And that's a reoccurring theme under Commissioner Rob Manfred. Should A.J. Hinch be managing? No, he cheated. Over the course of an entire season, over the course of two seasons, the man cheated the game of baseball. Should he be managing? No. But the fact is, baseball gave him a one-year suspension. That one-year suspension is up. I don't disagree with Detroit giving him the job. I disagree with the way Manfred handled it. It's the same thing with Cora. I thought that Alex Cora may have received a lifetime ban. I really thought when Major League Baseball was doing their investigation, there's a great chance because he was in on it with the Astros, and there was evidence that they used some sort of device for sign stealing when he was with the Red Sox. There's evidence that suggests that. I thought that Cora may receive a lifetime ban. Not only did he not receive a full year suspension, you have to look at it this way. Cora received a 60-game suspension, and he was given a year off when the Red Sox had traded Mookie Betts and they were embracing a rebuild. I'm telling you, Alex Cora got the best deal in Major League Baseball. He got to avoid the COVID season. He got to avoid all the struggles that you would have to go through with the taxi squads. This guy made out like a bandit. Got his World Series championship ring in Houston and in Boston. Those championships didn't get revoked. He came out smelling like a rose. And I'm telling you, if they win a championship, you'll never remember this. History's rewritten by the winners all the time. Biggest problem with what's happening in Boston right now, it's not going to fix every problem because Chris Sale, he's got Tommy John surgery. Eduardo Rodriguez, he's got some issues as well, a heart condition that he developed following his COVID diagnosis. There's problems within that rotation. Boston finished with the third worst ERA in baseball. The only two teams that were worse in the ERA department, the Rockies, and it was just by a hair, and the Tigers. There's a lot of issues there. However, Cora, he avoided the first year of the rebuild. That's not the only story coming out of baseball. Rob Manfred, Commissioner Manfred, says today that he will not punish Justin Turner for leaving isolation after testing positive for COVID-19. It was amazing to me that this story stole the show of the Dodgers winning their first World Series title in 32 years. This is all anyone was talking about the next day. And I, for the most part, stayed away from this story. I didn't really want to get into it. We typically just try to talk about the game here on the show. But I'll tell you right now the reason why Manfred's not going to suspend Justin Turner. Major League Baseball dropped the ball in the whole COVID case to begin with. You allowed this guy to play 7 innings of baseball before he was pulled from the game. And if you go back over the timeline of the COVID-19 tests, everybody on that field was exposed to Justin Turner. So to me, it wasn't a Turner deal, it was baseball. Once again, a lack of leadership. You have protocols in place. You pull a guy in the 7th inning after you allow him to play up to that point. They had all been exposed. Everybody on that Dodger team had been exposed. Not just while the game's going on, during the entire day. During your walkthrough early on, the whole team had been exposed. You think you're going to keep a 12-year vet in isolation after he wins his first World Series when he's been around his team throughout the entire day? You weren't going to do that. And so you can tell me that Justin Turner violated all of these rules. The fact of the matter is, baseball dropped the ball heavily. They allowed someone who was positive to go play a game. It wasn't as if Justin Turner was tested in the middle of the game. That's not what happened. How are you going to suspend this guy? And Trevor Bauer, who I rarely agree with, but he's very outspoken, yeah, he ripped Rob Manfred on Twitter after this story really overtook the world of baseball, and he was 100% correct. Once again, the safety of the players was supposed to be one of the very top conditions to get a 60-game season, right? The safety of the players was the reason why we had no off days during the divisional series, no off days during the championship series, and just one off day in the World Series. And that's why it was played in a bubble. That's why there was no home field. And you allowed someone to play a game. You allowed them to play seven innings without knowing they were positive. Baseball dropped the ball here. Did Justin Turner do the right thing? I'd probably not, but I'm going to tell you, I would have done the same thing. Many would have. So for those who were shocked that baseball is not going to suspend Turner or give him any punishment, you can't, because, again, it was Major League Baseball that screwed this deal up. Those are the storylines coming out of MLB. Again, Alex Cora back with the Red Sox, and the news that Justin Turner will not face punishment. He apologized, and I guess they cited that's part of the reason why he's not going to face punishment, because he apologized. That's not the reason why. And we'll end by some news coming out of the world of boxing. Pound for pound, I'm not going to say he's pound for pound number one. Definitely pound for pound top three in the sport. Canelo Alvarez, boxing's cash cow at the moment. He has officially a free agent. Canelo Alvarez and Golden Boy Promotions reached an agreement to release Alvarez today. There's been problems going on with the zone and the contract and Alvarez wanting to fight and Golden Boy getting in between potential fights. The situation between him and Golden Boy and the zone, it's been really bad for several months now. In September, Canelo filed a lawsuit in federal court setting a breach of contract. He had an 11-fight, $365 million deal. That was signed in 2018. And for whatever reason, he hasn't fought since November of 2019 when he defeated Sergey Kovalev, which was on DAZN. And if you watched that fight, you saw what a train wreck it was, because they wouldn't start the main event until after a UFC fight that night. I went to the movie theaters up north to watch this, and I was blown away that Kovalev and Canelo were laying down on a couch waiting for the UFC fight to get over. I was at a movie theater watching it. I had no idea what was going on at the UFC event. I just knew these guys couldn't fight until the UFC event was over. So there's been a lot of issues, a lot of court filings. Today, Golden Boy, Canelo Alvarez, they part ways. And it's sad. I got to see Canelo fight live back in 2010. It was on the undercard of Mayweather-Mosley. Canelo was a rising star. He's been with Golden Boy for many, many years. I mean, Oscar De La Hoya has played a big part in helping him become the star he is, but there's obviously some problems there. Canelo Alvarez, the top money man in boxing, now officially a free agent. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll give you the local sports recap. We'll also start talking college football. No Utah-Ute game tomorrow, but we have a showdown between number one Clemson and number four Notre Dame. No Trevor Lawrence. How does that impact this contest? And what does it mean for the Irish if they get a win? What does it mean for the Irish if they lose? All that and more coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. After opening up the swimming season on Tuesday, the Carbon Dinos will travel on the road to the Richfield Invitational tomorrow. This will be an event that will pit Carbon against several schools from around the state of Utah. The Lady Dinos are fresh off of a dominating performance on Tuesday as they look for their third consecutive 3A state championship. The early season invitational will serve as a great gauge. You can get the complete results from the season opening meet by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com, and on Monday, we'll go over the invitational results. We stick with high school athletics and we move over to Emory, where on Monday the boys basketball team will play host to tryouts for the 2020-2021 season. Emory is under the direction of new head coach Jeff Cincinnatus. The season is expected to begin on November 18th. There'll be a home game with American Leadership Academy. The first road game of the season will take place on November 24th at JUAB. Recently, we were joined by Coach Cincinnatus on KOL's Drive Time Sports, and he talked about the upcoming season and also being in the two-week moratorium.
Basketball season's here. We're in our two-week moratorium prior to tryouts, which are November 9th. So we have no contact as coaches with our kids right now until tryouts start on that Monday. And then we jump into the fire. You know, we have basically a week, and we're playing games, and I'm excited for it, and I think the kids are excited, and hopefully, you know, everything with the virus continues to work in our favor that we're able to have a basketball season. I know there's, at any given time, they could pull that out from underneath us, and I hope that doesn't happen for these kids' sake, and, you know, we'll just keep moving forward day by day.
Again, tryouts will take place for Emory on Monday. For more information, you can visit CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to MMA, and coming up next Saturday, Fierce Fighting Championship, a local MMA promotion owned and promoted by Cody Bunderson, will hold their biggest show in the history of the promotion as they travel to the Maverick Center for a card that features 15 fights, including the main event that pits Bobby King up against Steven Seiler, who was a former member of the UFC. Tickets for the event are currently on sale, and a very limited quantity is available by visiting access.com. Yesterday on KOL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Bunderson, and he talked about the premise of the show, which is definitely drawing attention.
A little bit of backstory here is showdown fights that used to take place at UVU was a fairly big regional organization that was sending kind of a feeder show for a lot of the bigger shows. Its owner, a guy named Will Farrar, passed away a few years ago, and we wanted to do a tribute show to him and to the Showdown organization, kind of for them being the first really big show. We wanted to do a tribute show to Will and to honor him and Showdown, and so the name of the show, we're calling it, is Willpower, which is dedicated to Will Farrar. So we tried to bring back a lot of the old Showdown fighters.
If you're unable to make it to next weekend's event, you can also purchase pay-per-view at FierceFightingChampionship.com. And we end by moving over to the national sports scene. Tomorrow, the Utah Utes will open up the season against the Arizona Wildcats on the football field. Live coverage of tomorrow's contest will begin at 1 p.m. and kickoff is scheduled to begin at 1:30. Again, that's the Utah Utes and the Arizona Wildcats tomorrow on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Shotgun snap to Fields. Play action fake. Throws deep left side for the corner of the end zone. Caught for the touchdown. What a catch by Austin Mack.
When you win by 1 point or 50 points, it's a win. It's kind of like when I make a birdie in golf. You know, most time when I make a birdie, it usually hits off a tree and runs across the green. And I put it in, I write 3 on my scorecard.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You know it ain't my time to call it a day, but it's about time you remember the name,
We thought we were going to get the start of the Utah Ute football season tomorrow. That's not going to be the case. However, it's not all bad news for Utah. Just a couple of days ago, the announcement was made that Kyle Whittingham had signed an extension. He's going to be with the program until 2027. So that is a massive positive for the football program and the university. We're going to talk everything coming up tomorrow. Still have some big games. In fact, we got a big one tonight, BYU and Boise State. We're going to do all that and more right now with our next guest, Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports, joins us each Friday to talk college football. Antoine, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Really good to be with you again.
We'll start by talking about what's happening here in the state of Utah. We'll get to the Utes in just a moment, but BYU fans are rightfully very excited about the way this season has panned out so far. I mean, if you go back to the beginning of the year, you didn't know if this team was even going to get to play football with everything that was happening. Here we are now, 8-9 weeks into the season, BYU number 7 in the country, and now they finally have a test, which I think will not necessarily tell us if they are a playoff contending team, but at least if they're a legit top 12 team. They travel on the road to take on Boise State, who has also climbed into the top 25 at 21.
Yeah, I think it's a huge game, one of the better games of the weekend. Obviously, Boise, we know about that program and how great they've been for the last decade plus. And BYU's coming in, having an outstanding year, also undefeated. Zach Wilson's been one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Actually committed to play and be at BYU at one point in time until he reneged and went to BYU. So it's going to be an interesting game for sure. I can't wait to see it. It's definitely going to come down, I would imagine, the final few minutes in the game and who maybe takes care of the football. But, yeah, this is definitely, everybody talks about the Notre Dame-Clemson game for obvious reasons, but I think this is definitely the best game of the weekend other than that.
I would agree with you there. I would definitely agree with you there. And as far as Zach Wilson goes, the hype train continues to pick up more and more momentum each weekend. You cover the NFL as well. I know you're knee-deep in Panthers talk. So let me ask you this, Antoine. To say that Zach Wilson at this stage is a top-10 pick in the NFL draft, true or false?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. He's definitely trending in that right direction. I know everybody talks about Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence there, but you talk about possibly the third quarterback taken, and as we've seen, there's a lot of teams that can use potential quarterback help in the NFL. I definitely think you look at a guy like Zach Wilson, who has a lot of experience and really coming to his own this year. Definitely kind of not necessarily reminiscent of what Joe Burrow did last year, but kind of similar to the point where he came out of nowhere, and now all of a sudden people are talking about him being the potential top pick in the draft.
Yeah, it's been phenomenal to see. And I'll ask you another true or false. If BYU wins, they become a legitimate playoff squad. True or false?
I'm going to say false just because of their schedule. I don't think they're going to get to a playoff. But you look at the rest of their schedule, they got North Alabama and San Diego State. I mean, who's to say they wouldn't at least get a really nice bowl bid? And I think, although I know a lot of those fans might want to get into the playoffs, but you're playing a bowl game like the Sugar Bowl or Cotton Bowl, I think that would be definitely a win for this program.
There were people calling for Kalani Sitake's job over the last couple of seasons, and maybe even rightfully so. The program was not trending in the right direction, and I thought going into the season it would be bad for BYU just based off the schedule, because I thought that the Cougars would have a drastically better team than what we've seen in the past. I just didn't know if they would get the full credit for it, and that may be what ends up happening. Still, ultimately, we're really never going to know, because even if you get to a New Year's Day 6 bowl, when you play a schedule like this, it's just difficult to tell. There's no doubt from the eye test, this is the best team that Kalani Sitake has had, hands down. There's no question.
Well, yeah, no question about that. And that's why I think they have a real legit shot at going into BYU and coming out with the victory there. People may look at their schedule and say who they played, but they're supposed to, and they've beaten them pretty handily. So I definitely think this is going to be a very, very fun contest against a Boise State team that's always in the midst of it, and also could be in a midst for a big-time bowl game themselves.
Let's jump to the Pac-12. We talked about this throughout the week, the idea that a Pac-12 squad could be competitive, maybe run the table, go 7-0, and still not make the college football playoff. The news of the Utes in Arizona not playing tomorrow is just another, I don't want to say blemish, but it's just another mark against the Pac-12. I don't know that they get five or six games in. And so when you look at it, maybe Oregon, who's top 15, USC's top 20, but when you look at the other Pac-12 schools, already we have four that aren't playing tomorrow. Antoine, what's the possibility of a Pac-12 squad running the table and getting into the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't see any chance, especially with the limited games on their schedule and, you know, the teams that you're playing and within your schedule. I don't see it happening. And you know what? That's okay. I mean, there's still a big possibility there. I think anytime you can win the Pac-12 and have a shot to get to the Rose Bowl there, I think it's an accomplishment for whoever. So, yeah, I know if people want to be in the playoff and have those aspirations of winning a national championship, but I think just the fact that you're playing football and have a shot to play for a Rose Bowl bid, I definitely think that's kind of what you have to strive for, and then let everything else kind of just take care of itself. But that's all you can control is winning the Pac-12, trying to get to the Rose Bowl, and potentially winning that game. So I think no matter who your team is, I think that just kind of has to be your mindset going into the season.
Some of the best news that Ute fans could have expected during this whole, I don't know, 3-4-5 month span that we've had, not wondering if there was going to be college football. Kyle Whittingham signs a 4-year contract extension earlier this week, and in my mind, that's huge. I mean, we're talking about the third longest tenured FBS coach in the country. He's been in his role since Urban Meyer left at the end of 2004. Really, it's been that long that Kyle Whittingham has been in this spot, and typically this is a guy whose name pops up when you're looking at other schools from around the Pac-12. I never thought he would leave Utah. I thought he had that opportunity once upon a time, and he didn't take it, so it seems like he's a mainstay. But for Ute fans, you've got to be happy seeing that Kyle Whittingham is now there 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, 16 seasons, went 11-3 last year. I mean, he's done everything to keep the program afloat and take it to another level, including getting Utah into the Pac-12. And yeah, I mean, yeah, you would have thought this would be a launching pad job, but really he's turned into a destination job, especially with the resources that they have there. Now they're playing in the Pac-12 there and the success that they've had during that span. So yeah, I think he's done an absolute wonderful job there and continues to do a great job there. And there's no reason for him to leave at this point because he's just doing such a great job and getting recruits there. He's getting recruits from South Florida, which is unheard of considering the talent base and the colleges there in the Florida area and competing at a high level. So yeah, you got to commend him for doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing and at the level that he's doing it at the conference that he's doing it in.
Antoine Staley, again, our guest right now of Athlon Sports as we talk college football, some of the biggest games that we have coming up. We've talked BYU-Boise State tonight. Let's talk number one Clemson at number four Notre Dame. It's the first time since 1993 that two top five teams are playing in South Bend. I mean, it's been that long since Notre Dame, Florida State in 1993, where Charlie Ward's pass was knocked down in the end zone. That was the last time we had two top five teams playing in the stadium. I know there was a lot of hype at the beginning of the season when the schedules came out. We circled two games for Notre Dame. That was Clemson and North Carolina. We circled one game for Clemson. It was Notre Dame. It just seemed like there was a chance for Notre Dame and Clemson to meet twice. I don't know that this game's going to live up to the preseason hype just because Trevor Lawrence is not playing, but nonetheless, you're not going to find a better game this weekend.
Yeah, it's definitely one that you definitely circled there. Yeah, of course, Lawrence not playing takes a little bit of luster out of it, but I think it could be a prequel of what's to come, too, as well. Let's say Notre Dame is up winning this game. I know they're still underdogs, even with Lawrence being out. They win this game, and these two end up meeting in Charlotte for the ACC championship, then Lawrence would be available, you would think, for that game, so long as nothing else happens. So, yeah, I think this is definitely, for me, the best two teams in the ACC, not just in college football, but, yeah, in their conference as well. And I think it's definitely what we're going to see to come going to Charlotte next month in the championship game.
Longest winning streak in the country for the Irish. Second longest winning streak against non-ranked opponents. Yet one of the big knocks on Brian Kelly, who I believe is a top four coach in the country, really. I think once you get past Nick Saban and Dabo, I don't know that I would put anybody above Brian Kelly. I think he's been that good, and I think his situation at Notre Dame is completely different than the other coaches we just mentioned. But still, at some point in time, you have to log a signature win. And he was close against Kirby Smart not once but twice. They've gotten to the playoffs. They were blown out by Clemson 30-3. They were blown out by Alabama in the national championship. So when you look at marquee matchups, Brian Kelly's got to win one eventually. I mean, he has to.
Yeah, you would think so. He's been way overdue, especially considering how long he's been at Notre Dame. So you think this is it. This is probably the opportunity that he has. I mean, the best opportunity he has, I think, especially at home. You're not playing against one of the best quarterbacks, arguably the best quarterback in college football, Trevor Lawrence. And I think their team is just as good. I know Clemson has talent just at least leaking down their roster, but I feel like Notre Dame has good enough matchups to keep up with them as well and even potentially win this game. So, yeah, this is it. This is definitely a game I definitely think he needs to win, has to win, especially this situation, especially being in the ACC, showing that, you know what, even if they were to lose an ACC championship, at least you could say, well, you know what, we beat Clemson one time earlier this year. So, yeah, I definitely think this is a marquee game that Brian Kelly definitely hates to have.
Let's talk about the Clemson end of things here, because without Trevor Lawrence, we saw last week against Boston College, there's some deficiencies on this offense. They still have one of the best backs, if not the best back in the country, in Travis Etienne, and I think that he can present some problems for Notre Dame because the Irish like to control the clock. Still, there are some issues in this offense without Trevor Lawrence. He is that good. If Notre Dame gets a win tomorrow, will they receive full credit moving forward, knowing that Trevor Lawrence didn't play in this game?
Probably not.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I don't think so either.
I'm not saying it's fair, but I just think that's the reality of it. People are going to point and say, well, Clemson didn't have their starting quarterback there, their leader of the football team, and that's probably, and they're on the road going to South Bend playing a Notre Dame team who's also really good. So I think, like I said, I don't think it's fair, but at the same time, that's the reality. People are going to say, well, you know, let's see what happens when they play Trevor Lawrence again in a month from now. So, yeah, I mean, but you know what? If you're Notre Dame, you just go ahead and you focus on what you control and win the game, and you know, you happen to meet up with Clemson again after that, then so be it. But, yeah, all they can do is just control what they can control and not worry about what everybody else is saying.
Let's talk about Florida and Georgia. I was just mentioning Kirby Smart and his success against Brian Kelly. I don't know that this game, again, there's so many other good college football games. I don't know if this one brings the heat that it typically does, but still, nonetheless, it's an excellent game. This is 5 versus number 8, and I think that when you look at these two squads on paper, it should be a fairly evenly matched game.
Yeah, you do it. Think so. I think Florida played much defense played much better, but they did play Missouri last week, and now it's going to get they're really going to get tested against the Georgia team. Is obviously a much better team across the board. There for Georgia, they've had their issues going to football this year offensively, but their defense is one of the best in the country. So you're really a great offense against a great defense. Typically, a great defense ends up winning. I think that's probably going to be the case here in Georgia. I just think that Florida has shown at times this year they haven't been able to stop really much of anybody outside of last week. And I think it's probably going to be another close game, especially in the rivalry game out there in Jacksonville. But I like Georgia. I thought coming into the year, I thought Florida was probably going to be the better team, at least on paper. But I just don't trust that defense to make stops when critical moments. So I definitely like the Bulldogs in this one.
I don't think Florida can stop Zamir White. I honestly think that's what it boils down to.
Yeah. That's pretty much what it is. Yeah, can you do enough to just contain that? I don't know. I'm not really confident they can, especially considering what I've seen from their defense this year. That maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they step up and play well in the rivalry game, but that definitely remains to be seen.
All right, Antoine, I'm going to throw two Pac-12 games at you. You tell me which one you're more excited for. We have USC, again, playing host to Arizona State, USC number 20, or you can go the route of the Oregon Ducks, top 15 team, number 14, going up against Stanford. Which game do you like more?
I'm definitely looking forward to USC and Arizona State. I definitely think that's going to be a really, really good game. I'm curious to see how Arizona State looks this year. Obviously, USC is a team that a lot of people are saying that maybe the second-best team in the Pac-12. I kind of want to see how they look. So, yeah, I'm definitely intrigued about how both of those teams are going to look tomorrow.
Antoine, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Again, Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports. Please let the listeners know where they can find more of you.
You find me at Antoine Staley on Twitter and also find my work at Athlon Sports.
Antoine, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to doing it again next week. Thank you.
Yeah, that sounds good.
We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll continue to talk college football right after this.
Yeah, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Listen, you must... Say it again. Buscarini. All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queensbridge, you already know.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down.
Price, Utah.
Now.
Me and my man, Trav.
Yeah!
Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
We had NFL football last night. Green Bay topping the 49ers 34-14. And that loss, in my mind, it does it for San Francisco. And it has more to do with the record of 4-5 as it does to the landscape of the team. just the way things are going for the squad, decimated by injuries, over $80 million committed to the cap on the injured reserve right now for the 49ers. And last night, even diehard 49er fans probably had a very difficult time recognizing players like River Craycraft, 2 catches for 13 yards, had a touchdown taken off of the board in the first quarter. Ross Dwelly was just fine last night, 3 catches for 52 yards, and then you had Richie James, 9 catches for 184 yards on 13 targets. So for fantasy owners, pay attention to San Francisco, because right now, whatever the future may hold, I don't know how they handle the rest of the season. Winning doesn't do them any good. I hate saying that. I know it sounds so bad, but it doesn't. Toughest division, injuries galore. It's just a bad year for San Francisco. And again, they play in the toughest division in the NFL. Green Bay, on the other hand, they needed that win. It was a road victory that was basically given to them. Still had to go on the road and play the game, and that's exactly what Green Bay did. Matt LaFleur's got his team at 6-2. So we talked college football. We talked about some of the biggest games coming up this weekend. We'll look at the schedule in the NFL. And believe it or not, a game between the 1-7 Giants and the 2-5 Washington Redskins has a lot of meaning. Because Washington at 2-5 right now, just one game behind the Philadelphia Eagles, who are at 3-4-1. And it's an opportunity for Ron Rivera's squad, who won last week, to potentially get back into the divisional race. I think we can agree that Dallas is done. Again, it's a similar situation to what's happening in San Francisco. Injuries have just been dreadful for the Cowboys. And New York's just not a good football team. So Washington will play host to the Giants. That's Sunday, 11 a.m. start time. We have a very important game between the Bears and the Titans. And when you look at the standings, it means so much because, well, the Titans right now, they're at the top of the AFC South. They're tied with Indianapolis. And it's a two-team race at the moment. Every game is going to mean something. Tennessee's 2-0 in the division. Indianapolis has not won a division game. You have to pay attention to this race. Chicago on the flip side, they're trying to make the NFC North a two-team race. I have my questions regarding the Chicago Bears. I don't know how good of a football team this is. Had their chances against New Orleans, completely dominated by the Rams 2 weeks ago. It's almost a must-win for Chicago. If they dip to 5-4, they're not catching the Packers. But again, huge game for Tennessee as they're trying to keep pace or at least stay ahead of Indianapolis in their divisional race. Detroit and Minnesota, you know, the Lions are a team that I have discredited. If they find a way to win this Sunday without Matt Stafford, who's going to be out due to COVID reasons, then maybe Detroit becomes a player for the seventh and final playoff spot. Highly unlikely. The Panthers-Chiefs, this is a game that all of a sudden I'm really interested in. Because I have been impressed with the way that Teddy Bridgewater has played over the last couple of weeks, especially without his top offensive weapon. So you got to remember that Bridgewater comes over after having a lot of success with New Orleans last season, but he's playing for a first-year head coach in the NFL. New system, new head coach, and then you look at the way things have gone. Bridgewater hasn't played terrible. Touchdown to interception ratio hasn't been great. But when you gain somebody like a Christian McCaffrey, it's a game changer. And I really think the offense for Carolina could change drastically because Mike Davis was very, very good in McCaffrey's absence. He's a guy that's ran for 350 yards on 84 attempts. And I think if you add that dynamic to McCaffrey and you have Matt Rhule, who has a different offensive mindset to begin with, I'm curious to see, and again, it does appear that Christian McCaffrey is going to play in this game. So I'm curious to see how Mike Davis could complement Christian McCaffrey, how that works in Teddy Bridgewater's favor, because it's not as if he has world beaters on the outside. This is a team that wants to do work in between the tackles. Well, McCaffrey and Davis, I think it's pretty dynamic. So I'm really curious to see how Matt Rhule handles this. And then on top of that, you have the Kansas City Chiefs, 7-1, best team in the NFL. This is a can't-miss game. This is the game of the morning that I'm definitely going to be watching. We have other games that are probably better matchup-wise, but in my mind, I really like what Matt Rhule's doing. and the return of Christian McCaffrey against this Chiefs defense. It's just, this is a very compelling storyline. I'll be watching this game tomorrow, or on Sunday, excuse me. Early morning games, we get Baltimore and Indianapolis, and that's a huge game too, because I was talking about the race of Tennessee and Indianapolis, so it's a big game for the Colts, who are 5-2 with Phillip Rivers. But in the same sense, the Ravens have got to win this football game. Not only are they two back of Pittsburgh now, but they're only a half game up on Cleveland. And this is not an easy task. And when you look at the way the Ravens have played against good competition, it's not overly impressive. I mean, they beat Cleveland 38-6 early on in the season. Week one, week two, I think you throw those games out. They beat the Texans, not a great team. They lost to the Chiefs, and they lost handedly to the Chiefs. They managed to beat the Washington football team, Cincinnati, and Philadelphia, and they barely beat Philadelphia. And then they lost to Pittsburgh. The jury's still out on Baltimore. Typically, when you get to this stage in the season, you kind of know what a team is. I don't know what the Ravens are. And with all the preseason hype that we saw around Lamar Jackson, he hasn't lived up to it. I'm not going to say he's regressed, but he hasn't lived up to the hype. That's an interesting game there as well. It's a big game. Seattle at Buffalo. The Bills have not played great. Seattle, they make a move at the deadline. Russell Wilson's playing some of the best football of his career. 6-1 Seattle on the road against 6-2 Buffalo. Sign me up for that game. It's an early kickoff as well. Afternoon games. Oh, I'm sorry. We have one more morning game. I can't forget about the Broncos. Broncos-Falcons. Then we go to the afternoon game, and right here on KOAL, you'll get the Raiders and the Chargers. Chargers have made NFL history. First team to blow 4 17-point leads consecutively. That's incredible, isn't it? You know, as often as we talk about the Pac-12 here, Justin Herbert's been dynamic for this Charger football team. They just can't seem to win games. It may be exactly what the Raiders need, and the Raiders are one of those teams that are contending in the AFC for a playoff spot. Again, the playoffs have been expanded to 7, and if you look at it right now, you have Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Baltimore. So that's 5 teams. Kansas City, 6. That battle for the 5th spot, Cleveland, Miami, Las Vegas, it's very possible to get into that 7th spot. This is a game that could go a long way for the Raiders. In fact, you have to win this game on the road against the Chargers. It's probably a good thing that no fans are allowed in the stands, because I promise you there would be more Raider fans at this game than Charger fans at SoFi. Guarantee you. The Steelers take on the Cowboys. Should be a walk in the park for Pittsburgh, who looks better and better. They have made me look foolish. I'll repeat this every week. I said that Ben Roethlisberger would never start another playoff game for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I said that 2 years ago. Yeah, I was wrong. Barring an injury, he's going to start another game for the Steelers in the playoffs. They look fantastic. The last unbeaten team in the NFL, looking to go 8-0 on the road against the Dallas Cowboys. Miami at Arizona. Kenyon Drake out of this game. The Dolphins defense terrorized the Rams last week. This week they get Cliff Kingsbury. They get Kyler Murray. Curious to see how Brian Flores handles this one. And curious to see how much more freedom Tua Tagovailoa has this week. He didn't have a lot against the Rams. He didn't need a lot of freedom, though. Defense and special teams had played that well. So this is a game in the afternoon that I have circled. This is the game I'm going to be watching. It's just that interesting. Three best play callers, three best young play callers in the NFL. Young play callers. I think you have Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, no question. Cliff Kingsbury, no question. They all are in the NFC West. And we get to see Brian Flores go up against each of those teams. We saw what he did to the 49ers. We saw what he did to the Rams. What can he do against Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray, and the Arizona Cardinals? This is a can't-miss game of the afternoon. Early game, I'm watching Carolina and Kansas City. I do know there's better games out there, but the storylines are too much for me to pass up. Afternoon game, I'm watching Miami, Arizona. Sunday night football, Saints, Buccaneers. Second meeting of the season between these two teams. If you go back to when they first played, we thought there were worry signs. If you're a Tampa Bay fan, we thought New Orleans looked great. These teams are trending in opposite directions. No Mike Thomas for New Orleans. Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara have both been cleared. And then Monday night, how about this game? New England and the Jets. That's what we get on Monday night. Woof. That's a horrible game, isn't it? Patriots, Jets. Jets 0-8, Patriots 2-5. Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll come back, put the final touches on this week of Drive Time Sports when we return. Again, we're live right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're out of time on this week of Drive Time Sports. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive again. Sadly, no Utah Ute football tomorrow. It's been canceled. Therefore, we'll wait for Raider football on Sunday. That'll make its return to KOAL Sunday afternoon as the Raiders take on the Chargers. And then we'll be back with you on Monday. Always a pleasure to be along with you. I want to thank Antoine Staley as well. Next week, we'll dive a little deeper into the high school season as well, and we will see you then. Be safe. I am out.